It is seconds before 9:30 on this really, really, really cold Monday morning. Happy New Year, everybody. It is time for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with my ever-fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne.
Clearly, you are still retired because no apron.
I actually forgot.
Well, it's a perk of retirement that you can forget to wear your apron.
Yeah, we'll see how next month goes, what else I forget. Uh-oh.
Well, holidays have come and gone.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that. I'm pretty happy.
Yeah. You know, I think that we were talking to Mary Blake together, and she has this theory that I think is just wonderful, that if you don't have small children, that Christmas should just be like the Olympics once every 4 years. And that's kind of how we did it this year. This was a little bit of an off year. Decorating, I mean, I think how I decorated could be packed up in a couple shoe boxes. And then I did cook a prime rib for Christmas dinner. But
did you have a house full?
No, okay. And so it just wasn't, you know, a big affair. And so this was one of the off years. This is when we trained for the big year. This was a training year. How about you?
It's never a big deal at our house. And yeah. I couldn't even tell you. I probably made a cheeseburger for my husband. I can't even remember. I know that we had a nice bottle of wine. And it's a non-event at our house. So... But still, there's a lot swirling around the holidays, mm-hmm. and so it's almost impossible not to get caught in the vortex at some point mm-hmm. and then have trouble struggling out of it because it goes on for yeah. weeks and weeks.
You know, it was kind of an interesting thing this year. I got all this cranberry sauce from all these different people.
Oh.
Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah. So have you, are you doing a sampling?
Yeah. Well, I tried them all but one, and I didn't try the one because it was shelf stable and I had so much cranberry sauce. But my friend Debbie, she makes this cranberry chutney that she uses apple and then a lot of like apple pie spice. So it's very holiday tasting. Oh. It was really good. And then my friend Diane makes a fresh one, and I'm sure you've had it where you grind up a lot of orange and orange this, and but I really love it. It's really, really fresh.
Yes.
And then my friend Lynn had a friend Nancy who made a bunch, and so she gave me just a little bit of hers, and hers was super gingery, which was really good. It was really, really almost like exciting. You know, it's like, oh, this is so good and so different and spicy, and that was really good. And then Diane makes one every year too, that's really complex. It has apples, which. And pears, which, you know, you can imagine, but also celery and onions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so it's really complex. And then she puts almonds in there, too. But I hate to use the word hate. I hate nuts in fruit things to uh-huh. me. They get really mealy. So she leaves the nuts out for me, which is really, really nice of her. And so that one's really good and earthy and complex. And then the fifth one is one that I actually bought at the food web. Just those people that make the chutney and the jam and the pickles. And I just haven't tried that one yet, but it looks really good, and it looks more, not jelly, but just more homogenous than the whole fruit ones.
Is it cranberry or it apple?
No, cranberry.
Okay. I tried, I love the cranberry chutney. I know you're talking about, you're talking about Jennifer's stuff that she forages. In fact, I think on the label of the apple chutney, it actually says Farrell Gravenstein's under the under the ingredients.
I love that.
But the apple chutney is fabulous, and it has some smoked jalapeno in it. And
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to try it.
It's really good. I'm recommending it with a little slab of brie on a cracker. Really, really good. That is, you know, there are a million reasons to celebrate the winter holidays, mm-hmm. The holiday of your choice or your belief. But the food is mm-hmm. consistent across the board in terms of something special will come your way or out of your kitchen mm-hmm. During the holidays. So,
well, it's cold out, and so it doesn't suck to cook, you know. You're not raising your... house temperature 10 degrees hotter than it is outside, using your oven or your stove to slow cook something.
Yeah. I love the part where you're in the kitchen cooking and everybody's on the deck having a tall, cool one.
So, oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
The winter holidays are more, you know, companionable.
And I don't take it well. I mean, I'm actually like a way nicer person on the radio than I am in real life. And most of it is because we can't swear.
You cannot know. We don't have a 7-second delay.
We do. I was so excited when we got it. But then Graham said, it's not for you, Linda.
You still have to behave.
It's for the shows where people call in. And then that made me even grumpier.
So what have you been cooking in honor of this time of year? Anything?
Well, okay. So something that I do after Christmas, after New Year's, something that I've found is that stores will generally stock special things, especially like, you know, meat that are holiday related. And then once the holiday has passed, right after, they'll get marked down. And I'm always pretty excited about that. Sometimes it's prime rib roasts that are already seasoned, racks of pork, things like that. And this year it was turkeys, fresh turkeys. And I wasn't super excited about that, but gosh, they were about the price of a pack of cigarettes. What do you do, you know? Seriously. And so I got a couple, stuck one in the freezer. And then what I did is I just cooked one for regular dinner, which I never do. I always save turkeys for the holidays. And so I have one of those rotisseries, those portable ones. And we use that for turkey a lot. We'll buy a smaller turkey, and that's really good. But gosh, it's a lot of setup and cleanup. And then, you know, I don't keep it out regularly. And then you got to scare the mice out of it. No, just kidding. And then for Thanksgiving, I baked one in the oven, and it was as good as can be expected. You know, the breast was dry. But what I did is when I was cleaning out a drawer, I found a bag. It was a large bag, not a turkey-sized bag. So I squeezed that bird into it, which I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do.
Kind of like us getting dressed after Christmas dinner.
Yes. But I cooked it in the bag, and when you cook it in a bag, it takes about half the time.
Yes.
And then also, all the juice collects in the bottom, and it just turned out so much better than my Thanksgiving turkey. And all I did was I made turkey, mashed potatoes, gravy, and peas. And the gravy was a cinch because I just cut a hole in the top of the bag.
I love that.
Yeah. What do you call that thing? The baster.
The baster.
I just out all the juice and made gravy. It was so easy, and so much easier than when it's all, you know, baked onto the bottom and fond. And so it was just really, really good and really easy. And I am going to cook a turkey more often.
Well, shoot. I like the whole idea of the gravy being easy.
Yeah.
Because for me, the very best part of a roast chicken or turkey is gravy.
Mm-hmm.
I will be totally happy to just have potatoes and gravy.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we did.
Any kind of potato. I don't care. It could be mashed. It could be sweet. I don't care. Put some gravy on it.
I mean, I got in the freezer and got a bag of peas just so in case like nutritionist police were out there, they wouldn't like break my door down.
Oh my gosh. It used to be one of my mom's standard apologies as we were sitting down to dinner. I'm so sorry this meal is all one color.
Well, and I'm from Minnesota. That is like something that's like written into the Scandinavian,
well,
you know, tenet.
The frozen peas are easy cure for that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm so smart.
You are.
No. What have you been cooking?
Well, nothing really exciting, although I did, I cooked a pork tenderloin recently, and I was trying to decide, because pork tenderloin is sort of like chicken in that it doesn't, it needs help, I think. I think
flavor-wise?
Yes, it
Boy,
needs
it's
help.
A good cut of meat, though. It's
I know.
Cheap and it's good.
I know, and it slices beautifully, mm-hmm. so you can slice it like paper thin
for sandwiches the next day, yeah.
There's a lot to be said about it, but I always want to do something to it. I want to glaze it, or I want to marinate it, I want to do something.
I think you have to.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And so this time, I just rubbed it with the black truffle salt that
Ooh.
I got from the spice shop. And you know, the fabulous Tom Liner mm-hmm. at the spice shop had said to me when I said to... I asked him one day when I was in there, what would you do with a standing rib roast? What would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, just rub it with black truffle salt. That's all. And and I never got around. The rib roast is still in the freezer. But I have the truffle salt. So I just rubbed this pork loin with black truffle salt and baked it off, and it was really good.
Really?
And that is so easy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how much salt do you think you used?
I don't know, because that would have required measuring.
But you didn't, like, coat it?
No. Yeah. It wasn't a salt crust or anything. Yeah. I used about the same you would use if you combined the pepper and salt that you would normally put on the roast.
Okay.
And I didn't use pepper at all. I just used this black truffle salt, and it was just really delicious and so simple. I didn't come up with a rub or a marinade or anything. I just, but I did rub the stuff
into
it.
I never think of really cooking with it like that. I'm always, you know, like putting it in potatoes or or something like that. And I never thought of putting it on meat.
That's a really good idea, in mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's I think 90% of the truffle salt I use, what I use it for.
Well, I have some left. I'm going to try that because it's delicious.
Yeah.
It's subtly delicious, unless you, get carried away.
Well, and for me, my tolerance, that sounds weird, but I don't know how else to describe it, tolerance of it, is there's a definite line where it's over that line.
Yep.
And so when I buy truffle salt, I generally mix it like two parts regular kosher salt and one part truffle salt, so that I found that as salty as I like things to be, that's the right amount of truffle, so that I don't go over and turn it into like too earthy. But I really like the flavor of it. But it is something that there's a line. Just like vinegar, there's a line.
That's right. Truffles are, you know, it can just get skunky, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. The other thing I am doing right now, I mean, it's happening in my refrigerator even as we speak.
Ooh, this sounds exciting.
God knows what's going on.
Because I know
in
what's
there.
Happening in my refrigerator, and it's not the same thing.
This is not a lab experiment.
Yeah.
I am marinating some strip steak for fajitas.
Oh, nice.
And I found this recipe for a marinade that I really like.
Okay.
And so it is, it's sitting there in, it's soaking in its spa.
what's in the marinade?
It's just fresh jalapenos, a lot of lime juice, some cilantro, salt, pepper, olive oil, and cumin.
It sounds really good.
It's really good.
Okay.
And because it's the marinade that you're going to toss after you pull the meat out and clean it off and get ready to grill it, I don't even bother to do a fine mince of everything.
Yeah.
I just slice up the jalapenos. And I mean, everything's just chunked up because it's going to sit. So it's been sitting overnight.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, but it smells good even now.
Well, I made something Indonesian chicken, which I read
was
that...
Was the chicken actually imported or what?
No. It flew on its own. Well, there was a page in one of Ina Garten's cookbooks where she had all of Jeffrey's favorite meals.
Yes.
And at the top was this Indonesian chicken. So the recipe, well, I've been to Indonesia. I mean, and this is, it's, ginger, garlic, honey, and soy sauce. And if it was truly Indonesian, it would have been like a full pound of those blazing hot little peppers and then goat. I mean, that's because I've been there, I know. So it's not, it should be called like faintly Asian chicken. But anyway, that was the same kind of thing. Like you put it in a roaster, a pan overnight with the skin side down and with that marinade. And then the next day, cook it for half an hour, skin side down, and then flip it over, take the foil off, and then the skin gets really, really nice and crispy. It was a good recipe. I see why it's one of her husband's favorites.
Wow. You know, the chili honey would be really good in that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not, it doesn't kick your butt. It just is delicious.
Yeah.
It's not dangerous.
Yeah.
I am currently hooked on watching Asian cooking shows on YouTube where everything is it. The subtitles are in a different language. You haven't got a clue, but you know that was like just a half a cup of finely diced chilies everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when we were there. I mean, everything is so blazing, blazing hot. And so one night we said, can we just have some green beans with no spice? And so it came with just a quarter cup of the blazing red hot peppers. I mean, just on a side dish. And I'm not exaggerating. It's just like, oh, it was just it was really hot. Really, really hot. Breakfast was so hot. lunch was so hot. Dinner was so hot.
How did you do that? You guys are not really, you're Scandahoovians.
No,
you're not...
we're not. No, just from a Scandahoovian place. Just not, I mean, Dale likes spicy stuff, but spicy stuff does not like Dale.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So that's pretty much why I don't like, you know, turn it up to 11, yeah. like that whole country.
Oh. They have some sort of, I don't know, they've developed a tolerance.
Yes.
Yeah.
From birth.
Theoretically, it's really good for you.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that it makes you, you know, thankful to still be alive.
And you're stalwart when you grow up.
Once you're done eating, yeah.
I want to take a quick second, remind everybody that they're listening to Food Talk on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB in Tillamook, streaming at coastradio.org, and that Food Talk is a co-production of North Coast Food Web and Coast Community Radio. I'm Marianne Myers. I'm here with Linda Perkins. We're talking about home cooking. We're always talking Woo-hoo! About home cooking or other things.
Want to talk about restaurant cooking?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Well, I had a really interesting conversation with that guy, Mike, I don't know his last name, at A&B Pizza in Seaside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that used to be Avenue Q Pizza.
Right.
And I really like their pizza. So when I say they, that's stupid. It's only him. He doesn't have any employees. And it gets busy in there, and it's fun to watch him. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the Kraken, you know?
Yes.
Coming up like at buoy 10, so many arms, so many boats, you know, just, oh my gosh, because he really can multitask. Anyway, he should probably have a couple employees. but he's so interesting, I think, because what he wants to do is make good pizza. And it just reminds me kind of talking about how you become a good cook. You decide that you know, I would really like to know how to make pot roast. And you figure that out from going on the internet, looking at cookbooks, looking at recipes, looking at their, especially how people rate them. Mm-hmm. So if it has 500 five-star ratings, that's probably a good one to try, and just do it exactly how it says. And if you love it, then you have a good recipe for pot roast and you are good at making pot roast. So all he's ever wanted to do is make good pizza. But there's part of the restaurant business that just doesn't agree with him, just how he is personally. And part of it is ambiance. He says he doesn't want people to come to his restaurant because of ambiance. And so many restaurants are built around ambiance,
yes.
Especially in the cities, you yes. know, more so than here. He wants them to come for the pizza. So, like, you might notice that he doesn't have any chairs. I mean, it's pretty much an extreme, like, Don Quixote railing against the whole ambiance thing. It used to be, he's where the gray whale used to be,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
And so what he did is he tore down that dividing wall,
yeah.
and he made some benches out of them, which means he nailed three pieces of wood together, and those are the benches. And so there's benches, and that's what there is. There's, I think, six tables, and a bunch of benches. And then when I was talking to him, like, about his customers, his clientele, he says, well, I don't want to define them, which is nothing you ever hear when somebody is talking about their restaurant. They're always like, oh, this is the kind of people that comes in,
yes.
whether it's for tourists or if it's for, you know, the upper middle class or young, hip people. You know what I mean? They're always aiming at a demographic. And he is not. And it is so evident when you're there. I mean, there'll be some guy who's about 70 with his face completely covered in tattoos. There'll be, you know, a family of six. There'll be five young farmers holding a little farmer meeting, you know, about what they're going to do, hopefully to make ice cream. I mean, there's always so many different people in there. It's really, really something. And so I really enjoyed talking to him. He said another thing that, and I'm wondering what you think about this, that really made me think he was talking, you know, about his being, you know, against ambiance, wanting people to come because all he has ever wanted to do his whole life is make good pizza, not defining his thing. But then at one point he said, you know, it's just food. And isn't that interesting? Because that's, we try so hard, especially at the food web, you know, to we spend so much effort connecting farmers and organic sources of food that are sustainable and affordable to the people of the county so that everybody can afford it. And we spend so much work on there. And to say it's just food, it is just food. You know what I mean?
Well,
but it's worth working for. And he definitely works for it. But it's not like kind of like the foodie palace that you can see, the pedestal thing, the 97 Instagram photographs. Do you know what I mean? It
yes.
is just food. And so at first I thought, oh, just food, because, you know, how hard the food web works. But it's true. It's just food, and it should be a part of life. But it shouldn't be, like, I can't think of anything but a religion. I should have thought about this more before I talked about it.
You know what?
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it totally makes sense, and I think it is just food. I think that the reason that there are organizations like North Coast Food Web are because we have gotten away from understanding the real zeitgeist of real food.
Mm-hmm.
We think our food comes from the store.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who grows our food mm-hmm. or who raises our food. We worry about not being able to eat lettuce because there's, you know, it gets mm-hmm. recalled, what, at least once a year. We can't have
yeah.
romaine for a few months. All of those things are because we don't pay attention
mm-hmm.
to it. So that it's just food can be taken two ways, you know.
I think that you're right.
It is not a religion, but it is, you know, you need air, shelter, and food. You need,
mm-hmm.
it's one of the
mm-hmm.
top three.
Mm-hmm.
So it behooves us to pay attention. And,
mm-hmm.
and even if we're not foodies,
mm-hmm.
even if we don't want to cook, there is something to be said for supporting your local agricultural economy
mm-hmm.
so that everybody close to home gets to keep money close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And it circles around and we all get a little piece of it because
mm-hmm.
it didn't go somewhere else. So I think that those two things go hand in hand. We unlearned a whole bunch of stuff about just food a couple, maybe three generations ago, four generations ago. And now we're trying to learn it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to break a bad habit than it is to learn the right thing to start with. And it was easier when you were actually the person growing your food.
So I think that, like, when he says all he wants to do is make good pizza, that's what we need to learn how to do, is make good food. And so it has to taste good, and it has to also be good for you, and also ethically good, you know, not prepackaged and full
yeah.
of chemicals and stuff. It
yeah.
has to be good for you. But it's a spectrum, I think. And
yes.
I think that that's what he made me think is that it's not precious, and it's not packaged. It's someplace in between where you make something that tastes good and it's good for you. And that should be the end of it. It shouldn't go any farther than that. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
that it doesn't take up your whole day taking photographs.
Oh, you mean like the 3-hour tasting menu.
I think that
that's
one of the things
of
that he's
precious.
Kind of yeah railing
yeah.
against, that it's just good pizza. He makes good pizza. He's proud of it. You know, he does get all of his stuff locally. But because he wants to be able to always get it, you know,
yeah.
not have trucks iced over coming from Portland.
Yeah.
And he really made me think. So that's Mike at A&B Pizza in
okay.
Seaside. Go talk to him.
Well, go Mike. I think that that's a really interesting and valid philosophy. And I also would like to say that on that spectrum somewhere, I don't want to be so judgmental that we should never go have a burger and a beer, because I'm all down with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I am totally down with that. What I am very grateful for is that there are increasingly options
mm-hmm.
Where we can go do that and know that what's on our plate is from close to
mm-hmm.
home. And I think that that's like the perfect combination, because sometimes really you just want. I recently, a friend on Facebook who is from Texas was like, posted a picture of a really pathetic shelf of Velveeta cheese in a supermarket where it was like clearly not in Texas
mm-hmm.
because it was just a few sad boxes of Velveeta. And my response was, where's the Rotel? I mean, yes,
yeah.
in Texas.
To make queso. Yeah.
yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You open a can of tomatoes
yeah.
and jalapenos and you throw them into Velveeta and you melt the whole thing and
yeah.
you dip a whatever corn chip in it, and it is glutinous and just cram-packed with noxious chemicals and drop-dead delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes you have to go there.
Yeah.
I don't want to... I don't want to feel guilty for sometimes you have to go there. But I think that generally speaking, we just need to revere our food. That's all. And if you can get your hands on it and develop a love for, even if you only have like two things you really make,
mm-hmm.
If you can find time to love to make them
mm-hmm.
and share them with somebody, that's the whole thing, you know,
yeah.
right there.
Yeah, I think that people... have this idea, gosh, I'd love to be a good cook. And yes, that's possible, but to start out, just learn how to cook something good. And that's a decent amount of work, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't just happen. You don't just click on something on the internet and make it and often have it turn out right. You have to look at the reviews and you have to compare recipes,
yeah.
see, oh, these have this in common and they're both rated really highly. I should make one of these, you
yeah.
know, that kind of thing.
Or get a recipe from a friend
yes.
for something
yes.
you've already tasted and you
yes.
know you love, but you still, it's still a commitment of time. You shop,
mm-hmm.
do you cook,
yeah, do you know
you
what?
Clean up.
Even right now, there's this young woman, she's actually in my family, a niece of mine, and she came to me and she said, you know, I really want to learn how to bake cookies. And so what we are doing is we are trading time. She loves to organize stuff. You may have been in my house. I don't. So we're trading time. And that's a thing you can do. You can approach someone and say, is there any way you would teach me how to make your tamales? I can trade you for a pie, you know, or I can trade you for something that you like to do that you're good at, just something. And bartering, trading that way is great, you know, that's another thing you can do, but and that builds community, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that is, I think, one of the many unsung advantages of cooking and sharing food is
mm-hmm.
that you are building friendships that you might not otherwise have.
I love cooking with people.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah,
I think cooking with people and sharing food, especially if you've all made it together, to sit down and eat it together, is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think that if we just could figure out a way to fit the whole planet around a table, we would not have any problems. I mean, the big problem would be who's going to do the dishes. That could probably, like, start a war. I don't know. We're
yeah.
really good at starting a war. But
but that's something that's cool about the Food Web, the classes at the Food Web. And I don't know if you all know this, but if you take a class at the Food Web, you make a bunch of food. And then at the end of it, you all sit down and you eat it. And it's really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
And we critique it.
Yeah. No, we don't.
I think that if you are learning to cook by watching something, and I love watch. I mean, I'm watching cooking shows. I don't even speak the language.
Yeah,
I have
yeah.
no idea what that ingredient was.
I love that you do that.
and the little. The subtitles are all in not only another language, but like a whole other alphabet. I can't.
Yeah, yeah. Then I see stuff and I'm like, I wonder if that's daikon radish or jicama or onion,
uh-huh.
you know? And you're like, oh,
I know.
That could be scallop too. I mean, you know, you're just like, what? I wonder. Oh, but it's entertaining.
I love it. And I love that all of these shows that little podcast things that I'm watching are... they are going out and digging or harvesting whatever it is and then
oh, really?
Bringing it home
okay.
and then washing it and then prepping it and then cooking it in these giant woks that have, you know, building the fire
mm-hmm.
under the wok. I don't know. I just, there's something about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. I just want to watch it. I'm fascinated by it.
I have a wok. I have an outside wok that I love. It's got like a crab burner underneath it, and it's 22 inches around. It's carbon steel.
Wow.
And that thing throws 65,000 BTUs, which I didn't really understand the first time that I used it.
What did you do?
Well, I just tossed a little oil in there. There was like this column of flame. And I'm like, Dale, bring a broom, Kevlar.
Oh, my God.
Poor Dale.
Oh, but you got the hang of it. But what the heck do you cook at that?
You know, that's the thing with Asian cooking, especially Chinese cooking. You want it really hot. And if you fry rice when it's really hot, and it's a lot hotter than my stove can get, it's just, it has that smoky flavor. It's crunchy on the outside before it's all dried up and chewy on the inside. And and it's just true. The meat, you get a sear on the outside before you've, you know.
Because stir fry in a saute pan, the meat is always, I mean, it's almost impossible not to have tough, overcooked veg and tough meat.
Yep. And the temperature is the thing that fixes that.
I have an electric stove and I.
Me too. Tragedy.
Well, it's certainly not good for stir fry.
No.
Not at all.
Nope, but you get yourself one of them outside wear ones.
Now I'm scared.
It's not allowed close to the house anymore.
I guess not. And you got to make sure you got your hair up in a ponytail. Yes, you know what I mean?
And I do have Kevlar gloves. You got to have those.
Oh, God. Oh, we don't want to discourage people by telling them how dangerous it is to cook.
I think that's why men like grilling. There's that element of danger.
Yes, that's right. It's death-defying.
Extreme cooking.
Hey, it's 10 o'clock on the nose.
Wow, it is.
I know. So it is time for me to remind everyone that they've been listening to Food Talk on Coast Community Radio, KMUN, 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB, 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming at coastradio.org and on your mobile using the TuneIn app. Coming up in just a few seconds, NPR News headlines, and then John Stevenson is in the house.
He's so talented.
He is the talent, and he will be bringing you Lost Highways just in a few minutes. So, Linda Perkins, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marianne Myers.
And stay tuned, everybody.